Ocean FM.
Ours to Protect, brought to you by Ocean FM, the IBA, and funded by Commission Le Mans with the television license fee. Check out ourstoprotect.ie for more information.
Hello. Thanks for tuning in to this month's edition of Ours to Protect. For the past few weeks, I've been splashing around the summer-filled waters of the Northwest with fishermen, paddlers, and swimmers of all kinds. So in today's programme, we're going to be scooping up creepy crawlies that can tell us how clean our water is and hear about how we can all use our water connection to ensure that our waters and lakes remain at their very best. Although the Irish summer always likes to keep us guessing, it seemed that children across the Northwest have been taking to the water regardless.
Surfing, stand-up paddleboarding, and I really love swimming in the sea and in the rivers.
Well, I like doing surfing and just swimming, like, in the sea. I just like diving under the waves and stuff.
We got the, like, there was, like, different boards, like body boards and, like, stand-up paddle boards, but you could also just lie down on them, like foamies. Well, we kind of paddled out to the island, and then we paddled out to the second island the next day, so, yeah.
Well, I go to the beach a lot, because I live beside Strandhill. And I surf a lot too, and I like going into the sea.
I was doing surf life saving in Ross's Point 2 weeks ago, and we went out really deep paddleboarding, and there's really big jellyfish there. So whenever we were jumping off the boards, we would get up straight away as fast as we could. But it's always really refreshing, and it's just fun.
I do a lot of fishing, so I'd be fishing for pike and looking at different rivers. But I've done it, like, you know, outside, like, the backyard. Yeah, and it's a big river, and there's a mini bridge and all there. It's loads of really nice stuff there. It's really shallow, though. Yeah, so what we'd be doing is get a lure big enough and you try to catch a big pike. Yeah.
What's the biggest one you've caught?
Well, my little brother caught an 18-pound pike.
How big is an 18-pound pike, dude?
It's about this big.
Do you put them back in, or do you eat them?
They don't taste nice at all.
I wondered whether being out in the water prompted any environmental questions for young people living here. I should have known that they'd have plenty to say.
When are we going to be able to meet the EU climate goals? They've been talking about it for a while, but we just never get there.
Because if we don't take care of this world, you know,
we won't be able to
live on this, like, you know. As long as you put your mind to it, I think anything's possible.
To make sure we don't
stop the glaciers melting.
And water levels rising, because that could take, like, beaches could be going away in a few years, like
there
if the ice caps melt,
any, yeah, any water spots, yeah. Yeah. Except from a pool.
Sligo, like if the waters rise up loads, you know, loads of Ireland be gone. Like, it doesn't stop. Like,
well, trying to keep, like, our water safe, so that we have good drinking conditions and water life won't die off.
Well, how long is it actually going to take till, like, the waters are clear for the fish? Because there's most salmon, if there's 1,000 salmon born, only one out of the 1,000 salmons come back, because where salmon are born, they go away to, like, Greenland, and then they come back, but there's less salmon coming back, which means there's going to be less salmon being born. So how long is it going to take till the water's clear and so they can stop dying out?
There were plenty of reports of pods of dolphins off the coast over the last week or so, and I hope that some of you were lucky enough to enjoy watching them. Of course, it is lovely to sit back and take in our fabulous wildlife. But we heard in last month's programme how people who spend a lot of time outdoors can also make a valuable contribution to recording of wildlife and protecting biodiversity. And of course, those of you that are out there taking your leisure on our lakes, rivers and coasts can play a really big part here. If you're thinking about taking a step in that direction, it might be worth heading down to your nearest library, where they have a collection of field equipment, including insect nets, bug pots, bat detectors, and ID swatches for lots of different species that members can borrow. To take things a little further from here, I asked Luke Kenny, Community Water Officer with the Local Authority Waters Programme, about other ways that regular water goers can help protect our waters.
The members of the public, they're more passionate about their local water body. They know it best. They're, I suppose, intimately connected with it. They are perfectly positioned to be guardians or stewards of that particular water body. You start essentially studying what's there. You're carrying out science. It's citizen science, of course, is what it's called. So you're certainly building your knowledge, your awareness of that local environment that you're frequenting all the time. As a community water officer, I mean, one of my roles in community engagement is, I suppose, to direct people to information, to experience or skills or experts who have the know-how to fix some of these problems. And it's always great when a community group hears from directly from another community group. They realize, you know, what is possible, and, you know, you don't have to be experts or specialists to start out on this journey. You know, maybe the change in numbers of insect life along a river, an angler might notice that. Kayaker, yeah, might notice some change in maybe the amount of algae growing, or maybe a difference along maybe erosion in the banks, things like that. So, yeah, these probably all point to a gradual change maybe in the wider environment. Thinking about this whole idea of all the little streams, all the wetland areas are all feeding into this the main part of the catchment. It's like the veins of a leaf. You know, everything sort of flows into the central stem of the leaf, then into the branch, into the tree. You know, so you can imagine a catchment like that in terms of the streams all feeding into a larger channel. I suppose what I'm really saying is it can be very difficult to actually pinpoint exactly where the problem is coming from. There can be a little increase in nutrient in one part of the catchment, and that can obviously have quite a large effect further downstream. But knowing exactly where the problem is a little bit tricky. We do have scientists in LawPro that go out and actually try and identify where exactly the problem might be coming from. But that said, some members of the community can carry out similar kind of detective work if they want. Again, we're coming back to this idea of citizen science. We actively promote what we call a citizen science stream index, which is teaching community groups to go out and take samples of the insect and invertebrate life in streams. And by looking at that, you can get an indication of how good the water quality is. They can carry this out, take a couple of samples from their local stream every summer, and that will essentially monitor that stream and its health and see what changes might occur. So it's using those insects really as an indicator species. It's also a really good engagement tool for getting more members of the community involved. It's a particular favorite amongst kids when they see all these little insects and creepy crawlies from the riverbed. You know, they're slightly, I suppose, monster-like in their shape and appearance at times. You know, they can look, probably if you, I suppose, magnified them 100 times, it'd be quite ferocious looking. But yeah, it's a really good way of engaging with kids. And of course, those kids are going to be the future generations to look after and protect our water.
I got a little buggy. The buggy are impossible.
See? Some of them are really fast, aren't they?
And they got a little shell.
I've been trying to grab this little dude for ages. They're the smallest fish here.
Look, he's catching that fella.
Oh no, the shrimp's trying to eat him.
Oh yeah.
The bad for the day.
If you wouldn't mind just using this one, okay?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, good man.
Don't want to kill him.
I'll have your tray ready. Now when he swims, yeah, he swims backwards, which makes it even harder to catch him.
Whoa.
See him there? Check him on to the
ice. Super easy. When he slips to the corner, then he can't swim back anymore.
Keep an eye on him, he doesn't climb out, because he's a great escape artist.
I want to break you. Whoa, I found a really big one.
Oh, that's a shrimp, yeah. Freshwater shrimp.
A really big one.
So there's a taster of exactly how the enthusiasm of children can be fired by getting up close with some aquatic creepy crawlies. They were participating in the Power to Change's Ishka All-In event at Dorley Park, where ecologist Dara Timpson chatted to them about the different water samples taken from nearby streams.
I mean, that's what we're always trying to tell the kids. You can tell how clean or dirty your water is by looking at the different bugs that live in them. So most of these are taken from the Lochgill system, so the Bonnet River, a couple of little streams that go into it. So because we have the mayfly nymphs, the stonefly nymphs, the case caddis, they're all an indicator of good water quality. You might still have some of the bugs that'll tolerate dirtier water, like the leeches and things like that, but looking at these are all very healthy samples of water. So, and very simple, you know, like the kids, they can easily do this themselves. They just get one of those, like the little cheap nets that you get in Bundoran at the seaside, go down to the water, have a wee scoop around the bottom, put them in a little white tray and have a look. And we're trying to teach them here how to identify what are the good bugs, what are the bad bugs, and the different things to look for, you know. But looking at these samples, and it's what you would expect, is that because Loch Gill is obviously a water supply for so many people, they do keep a very close eye on it, and these are excellent samples here, so this is definitely from a water source that's not in any danger.
And how would people know if there is something up?
Yeah, so, well, something up, you know, if you have a total absence of the bugs who, you know, like the stonefly, the mayfly, the ones who are susceptible to pollution, if they are completely absent from your sample and you have a lot of leeches, you have a lot of the ones that can tolerate low oxygen, things like that, that's obviously when you've got a sign that you've got a problem.
And are there many citizen scientists that feed into this kind of information?
There would be, like LawPro, who are here as well. You know, they're teaching a lot of angling clubs, they're teaching a lot of community centres, you know, teaching people how to go down, take the samples, what they're looking for, what are the good signs. So the more people we have doing this, obviously, the better it is for the environment. So just trying to teach lay people that it's a very cost-effective way of checking how clean or how dirty your water is, you know, and just nice for kids. I mean, the nice thing about this is the kids are taking the samples themselves, they're getting their hands dirty, you know, they're looking at the bugs under the microscope. You can hear how much fun they're having, you know, because we're not interfering with them. They get to pick up the bugs, they get to see them, and so it's a lovely thing to do. Very simple, costs nothing, and when you think this sample of insects that we have is taken from a very tiny bed of the river, you can see how much life is actually under the water. I mean, it's amazing when you go look, and most people never get a chance to see this, you know. So you have a very thin mesh net, okay, so you put the net downstream of your boots, you do a little dance in the river, so you jig, do a little jig, you're kicking up all the insects that would be living in the rocks and things like that. They naturally wash down into the net with the current, and then you just literally collect your sample, and it's as simple as that. Yeah, don't need any fancy equipment, obviously for kids, mum and dad with you at all times and things like that, and get permission to do it, but yeah, it's very, there's no secret magic to it, it's very simple. It doesn't take you long to learn. We have charts here which will show you the good bugs, show you the bad bugs, so anyone can really do it. A lot of the anglers will have knowledge of the insects themselves anyway from fishing, especially the guys that do the fly fishing, but anybody can do this, that's the beauty about it.
Insects might not be the most obvious type of life in our waterways, so I was interested in what other kind of wildlife our school students had noticed while they were out and about by the water.
Birds and sea life, maybe? Little fishes and herons and swallows.
I've seen herons, swans, ducks, cormorants, jellies. There's also fish.
Crabs, jellyfish, fish, and starfish, eels. All different kinds of fish.
Dolphins.
Well, on the sand, I always see these weird, tiny little insects on the sand.
There's loads of, like, kelp and stuff, like, growing up, like, long. If there's, like, fish or something, they can, like, eat them. So one of the days, there was, like, a load of, like, fish. They were all, like, lined up, like, kind of swimming against the current. And then as they were swimming and we were going back across the bridge, I saw an eel.
Well, if the water isn't clean, then there's not going to be any insects, and there don't have any insects. That means that fish can't eat anything, birds. So basically everything's just going to die off.
When I asked them what things they felt could be done to try and help protect that life, one topic came up time and again.
Well, don't dump in the river. So maybe if you were, like, definitely the government, if they went to, like, around to the beaches or to the rivers and they tried to, like, clean out whatever junk had been put in them and try to make it better for the wildlife.
So there's a lot of rubbish going around, so I think it helps to pick up a lot of that. I notice a lot of animals that try to, like, pick at rubbish, and I don't think that's good because not a lot of it is safe for animals.
People throw trash in the floor. You should pick them up after you finish.
And there's a lot of cigarettes on the floor. I've seen, like, 10 already.
Picking up after yourself, like rubbish and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The bins here, like, often, like, during, like, the weekends, like, a lot of people get, like, mum jumps and chills, and they're often, like, overflowing. Mm-hmm. So, like, I feel like whoever empties the bin, they need to empty them more, because, or, like, get more bins or something, because it's always, like, coming out on here.
Sometimes, like, the birds would even take the rubbish, and that's not good for them at all, like.
If you're at the beach, like, take 5 minutes to pick up 3 pieces of litter, just put them in the bin your way back. Same thing with the river. Ice cream tubs or like spoons or cigarette butts is a big one, and vapes. Mm-hmm. Empty vapes wouldn't take you 2 seconds to put in the bin.
Every few days you can do a beach clean. Bottle tops. Mm-hmm. Bottles. Mm.
Plastic bags.
Plastic cups.
plastic bottles, paper cups.
So my name is Dr. Agnieszka Piłowarczyk, Dr. Aga for short, as people know me here in County Sligo and beyond. My background is environmental sciences, PhD in biosystems engineering. However, my passion and love and expertise is soil. We are in Strandhill Beach. I am a surfer myself. And interestingly enough, I can tell that being a surfer has been making me a better soil scientist. There's a very strong link between soil conditions, soil health, and water quality.
As you can probably tell already, Aga Piłowarczyk is passionate about the health of our waters and our connection to it. I asked her about different ways in which our unthinking everyday habits can affect our water bodies and the life that depends on them.
Most of contamination, if any, comes from inland. So, of course, rivers and streams would contribute to water pollution of a lake, and then sea or ocean. Yes, yes, there's a strong link between land and ocean or sea, yes. Water quality in Ireland in particular is not only about seawater. It's about drinking water as well. If my memory is correct, I think approximately 93% of fresh water in Ireland is a source of drinking water. So it's not really groundwater that we take for human consumption, it's the surface water.
So anybody that is beside any kind of water body
is responsible for what we then drink to our taps, yeah, at homes.
And what are the most common problems that we see in that kind of system, that linkage?
Well, there's a still ongoing problem with nitrates and phosphorus. And then we talk about pesticides, nitrogen fertilizers, both organic and inorganic. So like slurry, for example, farmyard manure. And then we talk about mineral fertilizers. And then we talk about human activities, like sewage, septic tanks, and the spraying of pesticides as well. Well, I know from the convenience point of view, it's easier to spray your lawn, your around the house with glyphosate, for example, which is now officially reported as very carcinogenic, very bad to human health and environmental health as well.
So that would be kind of common.
So minimize the use of pesticides around your homes. And then there's nothing wrong about a slightly overgrown garden, especially now knowing that we create this biodiversity for insects, for birds, for mammals. Maybe they don't look so pretty, but they have a great value, because we need to also think that pretty much we are all responsible for our environment, of course, and the water that we drink. Nowadays, you cannot say, I don't know. There's many options for like-minded farmers and people to come together. So, for example, Farming for Nature, walks and talks, and the general public, based on my personal observation, which is great, is becoming more aware of environmental health, soil health, water quality, air quality, yes.
Aga got back in touch with me afterwards to correct the figure that she quoted there, saying that in fact 83 and not 93% of the water that comes through our taps is drawn from the surface water here in Ireland. I don't think that makes her point any less compelling though. The truth is that anything that you put down your drain or into the water, no matter where you are, has the potential to make it into your own drinking water system. Farmers are given a bad rap when it comes to pollution, but I'm sure that all of us can remember instances where local beaches have been closed in summer due to E. coli in the water. In a country where we have almost 500,000 septic tanks, in various states of repair, pollution sources might be a little closer to home than we think. In addition to wells and drinking water, contamination from septic tanks and sewage systems ultimately end up on our coasts. Luckily, nature is also trying in other ways to save us from ourselves. At the Ishka Aulin gathering, ecologist Piero Kotchesis was on hand to explain how our trees work to clean agricultural and household pollution before it enters into the river catchment.
Absolutely. It's not just pre-filtering, it's not just physical filtering of silt and clay, as I mentioned. Now, they also work as a sink for nitrates and phosphates. This is very important because especially phosphates can cause algae bloom. So if you have a runoff from animal manure or anything that can cause an algae bloom, then that algae bloom will use up all the oxygen in the river, killing everything in there. So if we have a riparian forest, even a 5 meter wide section can catch 90% of this. So it is very important that we have them. And for willow, which is such a fast growing tree, after 3 years, they're almost up to full catching ability, let's call it that. So it's very, very good that they grow very fast and they're very efficient, very, very quickly. So we should get them because they act like a sink. Now we might use some pesticides and the riparian woodlands would stop the pesticides going into the river. So it's not always just agricultural pesticides or even manure that we're talking about. It could be the effect of people.
Okay, so and also people in their gardens.
Oh yeah, people in their gardens. It's super important that people get their septic tanks set up properly, because septic tank leakage is one of the main reasons why we have algae bloom in some of our lakes.
Yes. They're not maintaining their tanks, yes. They're damaging what's around them.
Yes, seepage does happen very frequently. So it's very important that we plan the location, the design, and we have regular maintenance to see if there's no seepage into our rivers.
Luckily, County Leitrim is the site for a full-scale test of a really novel approach where planting and coppicing of willow is being used to treat effluent from septic tanks. And we really can hope that nature-based systems like this might offer an effective solution to rural dwellers in the future. For Luke Kenny of LawPro, water is the perfect example of how different ecosystems support and interact with each other to help us out. And like Piero, he also started with the trees and vegetation on the riverbank.
Yeah, that's certainly one of the environmental measures that are heavily promoted nowadays, trying to encourage farmers to leave this riparian buffer zone, is kind of the technical speak, fencing it off so that livestock can't encroach on it. That then allows the vegetation next to the river to actually start growing naturally. Mm-hmm. That in itself can soak up any extra nutrient that might be running off the land, stops it getting into the river. As well as that, trees will start to grow probably on the bank side as well. That will provide shade and kind of cool down the river water, which is of course beneficial to a lot of our fish species and other inhabitants of the river. The bankside vegetation along with the trees, that will also provide a very good habitat for insect life to rest on, hide in amongst. Mm-hmm. And again, that insect life is vital for the fish, for the other creatures living in the river. For example, we're working with anglers out in Loch Arrow, and they're collaborating also with Inland Fisheries Ireland to fence off some of the smaller nursery and spawning streams that trout would use around Loch Arrow. And the idea there is just to keep livestock out, so livestock don't go in and trample kind of on the banks and erode the banks, and I mean loads of sediment gets into the river, potentially kind of blanketing the spawning beds, the gravel spawning beds of the trout. As well as that, they could just bring in extra nutrient in there, they could defecate, the livestock could defecate in the water. And even just the soil getting into those streams, the soil often has a lot of phosphorus kind of bound to it, and phosphorus is one of those nutrients that when it gets into waterways from whatever source, it can actually cause a lot of excess algal growth, eutrophication. Yeah, so nature-based solutions, obviously fencing off the riverbanks, as we've talked about, sort of letting nature take care of all that extra nutrient, perhaps. Urban areas, for example, then there is still scope for putting in nature-based solutions, little, what we call swales or little channels, maybe alongside roads, or any of the hard surface areas, car parks, things like that, and that again can intercept all that water coming off and actually hold it for a short period of time. Certainly these kind of urban-based, nature-based solutions, they're starting to gather a little bit of momentum around the the country. They are starting to appear in a couple of different places. You know, in an ideal situation, nature-based solutions are brought into the conversation when the design has been thought up, maybe renovating a street, park, some public area, then you bring nature-based solutions in from the start. How we can deal with that water that's going to be flowing off the hard surfaces. So for example, if they're going to have greenery, vegetation, maybe they're going to put in some trees, for example, you make sure your tree pits are certainly not higher than the surrounding pavement area. They actually act as a bit of a receptacle for water flowing off the surrounding pavement area, or little channels to allow the water to flow from the pavement into the tree pit or into the swale, that little kind of storage channel or ditch. And of course, you can make them into kind of a bit of an amenity feature. You can have maybe reed beds, you can have flower beds that can be planted up with plants that can cope with drought when it's not raining, but then can soak up all this excess rainfall when we do have these intensive cloud bursts, which we seem to have a lot more of nowadays, you know, with this changing climate.
As if to remind us of the wisdom of planning for increased flooding events, we've had some very heavy bursts of rainfall in the last couple of months. Ironically, this also means that we need to be conscious of how we use the water that is treated and cleaned for human consumption, as increased rainfall can overwhelm our treatment systems. So here are a few tips.
Turn off the tap if it's dripping or if you're trying to brush your teeth.
We have a special water butt in our garden, and if any of the water that we collect is used for watering the plants, and basically any outdoor uses, not quite for drinking because we're not sure if that water is completely clean, but definitely used for the plants.
Let's say when you're going to the toilet, if someone else has left the tap on, you can turn it off.
So my dad, he uses a power washer and it uses up loads of water. Needs to stop doing that and save water.
Shorter showers and less baths. The dishwasher and the washing machine, fill them all up before you actually put them on rather than filling them halfway up.
As Luke pointed out, flooding is less likely when our natural systems have capacity to soak in overflow. Aga Pivovarczyk's expertise is in soil, and she explains the science behind how a healthy soil ecosystem can help when it comes to heavy rainfall and water pollution.
When soil has a fully functioning soil food web, so it's full of life, full of good microorganisms, and that comes down to organic matter content, okay, and then once we have good strong soil structure, then the air comes in, and then we have micro and macro pores in the soil. Water infiltrates through macro pores, following gravity basically, while in micro pores it's been stored. So now that water that remains in the soil becomes water for plants when they need so, and for the microorganism to survive, to live. If the soil is healthy, if it's full of good soil microbes and has organic matter, then soil reacts with those chemicals. So for example, pesticides, some molecules can be absorbed to the soil and then decompose over time. If it's ready to take the nutrients, so excess nitrogen can be taken in and then, for example, used at a later stage by plants. We often see what we call the flash floods, yeah? After of a drought, when soils are very like crusty on top or else covered with concrete or any other pavement, etc. And this is what happens then in towns and cities. This indicates that the soil is not functioning well. Because if the soil could keep the moisture in it, of course, with some roots presence, with some plant cover, etc. So keeping our soils healthy can mitigate many of those water quality issues, both fresh and sea water.
And for anybody, that relates back to what you referred to as well, then leaving the plants on the surface.
Correct.
To feed the soil.
To feed the soil. Let's say when we talk about our gardens, do we really need to have just the grass there, the lawns? Why not to have a beautiful wildflower meadow? we would feed the birds, we would feed the butterflies, all the other insects. The bats would come, the hedgehogs would come, lots of different wildlife animals would come above and below ground. And that below ground as well, we need to remember that this, the life that is in the soil also need to drink and eat. They like us, humans. So what they need is to have living plants. They are fed by what we call the exudates, yes? The plant uses the sun energy to photosynthesize, to make sugars and simple proteins, and then to give them back to the organisms. This is how the system works, or it should be.
And Luke is singing from the same hymn sheet.
I suppose when you're looking at that bigger picture in terms of how the water moves through the landscape, then this is very much, I suppose, how the land is used in that particular landscape or that catchment, so the area that's gathering all the water. Humans have modified the landscape for millennia. There would have been more forests here in Ireland. There would have been more wetland areas as well. Those are probably the two main habitats that we've lost, or lost the most of over the centuries, over the millennia. And some of those habitats, of course, particularly wetland habitats, they're very good at holding on to water. So if you think of nowadays, we still do have bog or peatland areas. They're often higher up in the catchment, so towards the mountains, towards the hills. If they're intact, if they're healthy, if they're functioning well, then they act like a big sponge when there's a rainfall event. They soak up loads of water and then they slowly release it. So you get a steady flow of water down through the catchment. Once you start damaging that, say, peatland, bog habitat, then the water tends to flow off it a lot quicker. Some of that damage can be intentional. It can be drainage put into those peatland areas to try and dry out the land, perhaps to plant trees or to farm it even. And of course, that means water runs off faster. And of course, that can lead to flooding in the lower areas, particularly if it gets combined with maybe a storm surge or high tides down in the estuaries and the bays below. Yeah, we can certainly all play our part to improve things. I mean, some of the main problems might be in a very localized area. You know, maybe it's a bog, a peatland area that has been exploited in the past, or maybe it still is exploited. Maybe there's a chance to bring about a change there, to revert it to a more wild and stable and healthy functioning ecosystem state. And in many ways, those wetlands, those peatland areas, they're probably the most important, or certainly will be the most important habitats in the future, when you start getting more than likely more of these heavy rainfall events, these cloudbursts owing to climate change. Because if you have those, you know, functioning sponges that can soak up all that extra water, the river systems don't get inundated, they don't cause flooding downstream, they don't cause more erosion, of course, which can damage the riverbanks, either in farmland or in urban places. Mm-hmm. So if there was one place or one habitat, I would say the focus probably should be on, it should be on kind of the wetland, peatland areas that can act as those kind of great regulating sponges, shall we say.
Our students also pointed to a few different reasons that bogs are important.
Bogs, they contain a lot of carbon dioxide, and carbon dioxide, it puts holes in the greenhouse layer or ozone layer around our environment, which causes more heat to get in, which means that the poorer countries, which are the least factoring contributors to climate change, become hotter and more people like die in places.
Yeah, because we've done a bog exploration, there's animals' habitats and plants that you're digging up, and that animals might extinction because you're digging up their habitats.
Those children certainly are in sync with the Environmental Protection Agency, who recently investigated a large-scale unlicensed peat extraction operation in County Sligo, which is resulting in the alarming loss of a carbon sink and destruction of valuable biodiversity and ecosystems on our own doorstep. Now, on the positive side, almost 19,000 hectares of former cutaway bog has been rehabilitated by Bord na Móna in recent years. And on the subject of rehabilitation, you might remember that we took a trip to Hazelwood by bike with Joan Swift and the Sligo Cycling Campaign a few weeks ago. Joan was impressed by the fact that, in addition to trying to eradicate the invasive rhododendron from that forest, there were also plans afoot to work on the wetland ecosystem there.
It's interesting that the Irish name for Hazelwood doesn't refer to actual hazel trees. So, you know, Hazelwood as we know it now, that it's Caoilean Annig, which is more like the bog walk. And apart from the clearing of the rhododendron, the other part of it, I think, is going to be that originally there was an attempt to make various drainage channels, and now they're allowing those to fill in, and the wetland, if you like, to be restored. It added to the sum of their knowledge about and their enjoyment of Sligo, and you know what there is to do and what's happening around and so on, and an appreciation, I suppose, for our woodlands and for the people who work to, you know, to keep them. I went to Hazelwood again a week or two later, and we met actually two different people who were looking for directions, and you know, one wanted a walk that would end up in the part of the wood that people are already familiar with, and we were able to tell them, you know, that you could do that the two link in, so you can go for quite a substantial walk and see quite a variety of trees and of plants and of water life and so on. We're very, very fortunate in Sligo, really, and in particular in Sligo town, that so many places are so accessible and that are so interesting.
It's fantastic to be able to praise far-sighted work like this, which will no doubt bring all the benefits that have been highlighted today to our own beautiful Lochkill and beyond. Now, today our young people have brought us to lots of different challenges that our marine and aquatic systems face. Litter and pollution, flooding and water conservation, nitrates, phosphates, sewage and sediment. So we're going to finish with one environmental issue that they raised that connects to water in a way that they might not have expected.
And I think more schemes like the return scheme because of it. It's very because it encourages people to do stuff, because even if it's not really like completely telling them, oh, this is the right thing to do, they'll do it because it benefits them.
There's a new thing where the bottle dispenser, where if you put it in you get money for it.
Yeah. And the amount of plastic that's not going into recycling bins.
And the bags, you don't throw them, you can use them again.
And try to reuse everything that you have instead of buying new stuff and that.
Reuse stuff, so I won't be like buying a water bottle, like water from the shops, especially at school as well. I have like a refillable water bottle, so I'm not using plastic and stuff like that.
Not trying to recycle plastic.
Aga sums up some of the water issues that we've dealt with. And she's finishing by drawing our attention to another insidious source that's releasing plastic into our water system.
You ask about what people can do. I'd say think about their practices on land. That's the number one thing. We can't only blame the farmers and growers with pesticides and artificial fertilizers. We take some responsibility too. So if you have a garden, think about what you do with your soil around you. Think about your nearest environment first, and then come back to your house, see what you have, what chemicals you use in your household. Are they natural? Are they toxic? I know microplastic is now another hot topic, polyester. If it's not wool, if it's not cotton, if it's plastic, because polyester, nylon, all this comes from the land as oil, then it's made into clothing, for example. And then comes back as waste into water and soil. So when we wash in the washing machine, this water goes somewhere, of course. And the microplastic is being created. So we need to also be more careful of what we buy, what we wear, what we use on a daily basis. There's a bag that you can put into your washing machine to prevent this microplastic going into your outflow pipe. Plastic means it includes clothing. There's lots of now material fabric that is purely made of plastic.
So I think that there is something for everyone in there. Hopefully you can bear some of this in mind while you're out enjoying our beautiful waters over the next few months. If you are a regular swimmer, you might be interested in looking at your county council's list of designated bathing waters. And those are areas that are on the authority's list for ongoing monitoring of water quality. Up until the 26th of September, they're open to suggestions for changes to that list. And if you've got a recommendation in the Sligo area, you can email bathingwater@sligococo.ie before that date. As it happens, there are also other consultations open at the moment that might be of interest to those of you out there that are environmentally minded. And those include the local authority's biodiversity plan for the next 5 years, one on green corridors through Sligo town, and an active travel scheme at Clevra. If you have anything to say, you can make your voice heard by starting from www.consult.sligococo.ie. Giving an environmental perspective is always worthwhile, and we would certainly encourage you to do so. I hope that'll keep you busy for the next few weeks until Ours to Protect returns again. Thanks for listening in today, and please do come back for the next episode on the 31st of August.